Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. If you listen to NHPR regularly, you've probably heard this.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations. From the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio, and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression.
Joan Kroc famously made a $225 million bequest to NPR upon her death in 2003, perhaps best known as the wife of Ray Kroc, the billionaire entrepreneur behind the McDonald's franchise. Joan Kroc paved her own way as a philanthropist, donating generously to causes that would likely have made her late husband cringe. The couple is the subject of Lisa Napoli's new book, Ray and Joan, The Man Who Made the McDonald's Fortune and the Woman Who Gave It All Away. Lisa Napoli, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you so much for having me here.
So where did all this start for you, this Kroc fascination?
It didn't start because I eat McDonald's. It started partially because I'm a public radio reporter. And so, of course, I wondered when I heard that name every day, why? But more specifically, there was a public artwork here in Southern California, where I live, that was in disrepair, in need of costly repairs. And it turns out that Joan Kroc had anonymously funded this sculpture many years ago. And when I went to cover the story for a local radio station here, I thought, well, that's odd. You know, she gave all this money to public radio and she funded this peace sculpture of a nuclear mushroom cloud. That seemed odd and disparate, and given that she didn't live here, I really was curious and I couldn't find a biography, so I decided to write one.
So you took on this couple, this powerful couple, and learned, and maybe a lot of people have heard this, that Joan Kroc also gave another posthumous gift, $2 billion, to the Salvation Army.
Yes.
Was she religious, or what was that connection?
No, and that's what's so interesting, Virginia. The more I found about her giving, the more piecemeal it seemed. You know, a lot of people, when they give money, give it all in one place or in one cause, and they're very directed about it. But Joan wasn't that way. And so when I found that this gift to the Salvation Army that funded recreation centers that were to be built all across the country happened, and that Joan was not a Salvationist, then I found more about her peace giving that had to do with two major Catholic universities where she'd built these beautiful peace centers. And I just kept going down that rabbit hole and getting more and more intrigued because it didn't add up to make any sense. And, you know, naively, even though I'd written a book before, I had no idea how impossibly hard it was going to be to find out more about her, partially because she didn't leave a trail the way many philanthropists or business people do. And McDonald's wasn't willing to work with me, so that made the task even more challenging.
Well, you did find out a lot about her. She was brought up in a poor household in Minnesota. Now, how did she meet Ray?
That's also very interesting. It turns out that Joan was Ray's third wife. She was 26 years younger, and she met Ray when he walked into a restaurant where she was playing organ to entertain the diners in this very fancy place called the Criterion. And Ray walked in to sell her boss a franchise of McDonald's. This was in the very, very early days when Ray had just signed on to sell franchises for the Brothers McDonald, who operated out of San Bernardino, California. Ray had become dazzled with their formula and was on the road trying to replicate it around the country, and Joan's boss was one of the early buyers. He opened store number 93, in fact.
So on the surface, third wife, 26 years younger, playing organ at a restaurant. Was he a wealthy man when they met?
No. In fact, he was far from a wealthy man, and McDonald's was far from successful. It was a time in America, the post-World War landscape, as the roads were being paved out to the suburbs that were developing, and fast food was becoming a thing. McDonald's was not the only propagator of fast food, and it was a really exciting and interesting time, but Ray was far from wealthy, and McDonald's was actually in a precarious situation, even though the first one was super successful. back in California. As Ray was selling these franchises around the country, he was quickly finding out that the franchise formula he had was not super ironclad. And yes, it's very easy to look at Joan and think, wow, you know, she saw this man who was a dashing businessman and sparks flew. But really, honestly, it took them years before they married. And once they did marry, Ray was enormously wealthy. But Joan's first husband had become quite well off himself, building McDonald's of his own.
Hmm. So it was actually 12 years before between that meeting time and they actually married. Was it a happy marriage?
It was a very complicated marriage, Virginia, as many marriages are. Ray was a drinker. And what was interesting about that is that Joan was very troubled by his drinking and his aggressive behavior when he drank. And instead of divorcing him, she decided to stay in the marriage and turn her pain from dealing with living with an alcoholic into something that turned out to be very useful and instructive for other people in a similar situation all around the country. And that, to me, was a really telling indicator about her, that it wasn't just about her. She wanted to find a way to help other people who were suffering.
And she did. Was this the beginning of her philanthropic work?
It was. She had given some gifts before that, especially once she married Ray and had access to his fortune. But this was her real entree into the philanthropic world. And it was very exciting because it was a time before we talked about alcoholism publicly in a common sense, the way we do today. And rehab facilities all around the country were developing and coming up with new and interesting techniques. And Joan was able to coalesce this burgeoning movement of rehab experts, both because she had the money and the interest, but she took them too and made movies and popular culture books. She got Dear Abby to write about a pamphlet that she produced. And she wanted to reach the people, not just the educators. And that really also was a very interesting indicator for me about her personality, too.
When was this?
So this was in the 70s, and this is at the height of Ray's popularity. And what's also interesting here is that while Joan was being trotted around on a press tour, it was very very pointed that Joan not discuss Ray's problems, Ray's afflictions. And at around this time, he got invited to New Hampshire, to Dartmouth. Now, neither Ray nor Joan had gone to college, but Ray, because he was such a popular businessman, was invited to the Tuck School to speak about his success and how he'd turned McDonald's into what it had become. And meanwhile, Joan went along with him on one of the trips when he spoke to the students there and sort of muscled her way in to Tuck's hope that Ray would give money to them. And instead, she developed a partnership with the medical school and ended up working with the medical school for many, many years on her alcoholism education program.
My guest is Lisa Napoli, the author of Ray and Joan. It's about the life and the philanthropy of Joan Kroc, wife of billionaire entrepreneur Ray Kroc, who made his fortune as owner of the McDonald's franchise. Ray was politically conservative. I would say even staunchly conservative. That was my impression from your book. He died in 1984. Did the focus of her philanthropy change after his death?
Yes, almost immediately after Ray passed away, she shifted gears. She did for a while continue to fund places like Betty Ford and Hazelden, preeminent rehab facilities. But really her shift went toward the peace movement. And that's where that peace sculpture that got me interested in all of this came about. She got involved with Norman Cousins, who was a preeminent thinker of his day and the founder of and the editor of the Saturday Review, and started funding research that he was doing into the mind and body connection. That was revolutionary for the time, the idea that your physical state was impacted by your mental state. She got really involved with hospice after Ray had passed away and her father with hospice care. She had met a doctor on a plane who was very interested in building the first freestanding hospice in San Diego, where they lived at the end of their lives. And she just funded the hospice anonymously. So she had a wide-ranging interest in in so many different things. And once Ray was gone, she just followed that with abandon.
How do you think he would have felt about her philanthropy towards these causes for peace? You know, NPR, the Salvation Army, even hospice is considered controversial by some, especially religious conservatives.
You know, what's interesting is the paradoxes here with the Crocs. While Joan was convening all of these rehab folk in her and Dartmouth Medical School folk in her home in Santa Ynez, California, during this movement called Operation Cork, as she called it, Ray would be there with a cocktail in hand, participating in the discussions. So it's hard to know how he would react to the things that she did once he did pass away, because even though they did seem discordant with his political views, and he wasn't a religious person, and he was very skeptical of traditional education and many, many of the things that she funded, it's really hard to say, because he just adored her so much, even though he wasn't willing to come out as an alcoholic until the very end of his life, to acknowledge that he had a problem, he supported Joan. So it's what kept me interested in this couple for so many years, all the research that I had to do, because a lot of it just doesn't add up or make much sense.
And you mentioned that McDonald's did not work with you on this. I understand that a number of people there, you know, were not particularly happy about her helping the Democratic Party or nuclear disarmament or AIDS research, even thinking in some ways that she did it to get under his skin, back at him?
Right, which I think is just incredibly sexist, actually. I mean, he left her his money and with no agenda or strings attached, and she did with it what she felt was important and good. A lot of the old guard McDonald's guys were guys. It was a very Mad Men era at that time, the 60s and 70s. And I think the idea that this woman came along and swooped in and interrupted what he had been doing with philanthropy, his brother was guiding his philanthropic charity while he was still alive. I think there's just an air of sexism and maybe even some envy, because she got to make her mark in such a large way and in such an individual way.
She sounds like a feminist. I mean, would she say that? Did she see herself as that?
I don't think she ever identified herself as a feminist, but she certainly was. Everything about her, she funded the first conference of women who came together in Washington, D.C. to discuss the menace of nuclear weapons. She loved strong women, educated women, the woman with the hospice, the woman who ran the Salvation Army when she was giving them money, a woman who was a pioneering doctor working with AIDS patients. I think she just really loved that women could do things that she wasn't able to do as a woman of her age and her means in the contemporary times. And she wanted to support that in every way she could, not to the exclusion of supporting men. But if all that doesn't add up to being a feminist, I don't know what is.
Well, Lisa, I'm so glad you followed that curiosity from the Peace Monument to this book. Thanks so much for telling us about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lisa Napoli, she's a journalist and author of Ray and Joan, The Man Who Made the McDonald's Fortune and the Woman Who Gave It All Away. There's a link to find more on the book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.